woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in
it. Lord, welcome back. Lord, welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P Futures. We'll get them in a minute here because I'm trying to find a feel-good story. Of course, I lost them. I must have lost it in the cloud, man. Can you lose stuff in the cloud? S&P Futures down a buck. NASDAQ Futures down 39, Dow up 37. Very quiet yesterday and so far this morning with the Fed chairman speaking this afternoon, and this one is ripe for issues because, as the young lady on CNBC said, we went from no inflation to temporary inflation very rapidly. And he's going to say how good that is, and which is exactly against everything I've ever learned. But that's what they're doing. That's what they're pulling on now. They're still doing QE. They're still buying stuff. We don't exactly know why. Kevin, how are you?
I'm temporarily inflated myself.
So what'd you have, a big dinner? You already had your corned beef and beer.
No. But I'm more likely later in the day to be temporarily inflated because it is the highest of holidays today, and I may have to tip a glass or two.
I will never forget last year where we closed the night before. Just saying. That was the first St. Patrick's Day in ages that I have not been able to go and have a corned beef sandwich and a beer, and I usually do it to the Tripoli, and I guarantee you I will be there tonight. I already got my gang together. Right. Your buddy, Mr. Flanagan, alleges to be with me. So,
what time should I be there?
Well, I'm not sure. With 50% occupancy, I'm not so sure there'll be room at the inn, but I'm hoping. Just saying. But yeah, I don't know what the stories with that tonight. You think maybe it was St. Patrick's Day? I don't know. People have kind of lost the habit of going out, I think, a little bit. But
well, there's some of that. You have the Chicago Saturday before is a big St. Patrick's Day party, and obviously it was tempered this year, but there were still a lot of younger people out. The day of is usually when people that will go out with their coworkers, during maybe cut out of work a little early. And obviously, with everyone working from home, you probably won't see that as much. So I'm interested, too, to see what it's going to be like tonight.
There's nothing like the when I first started the trading floor, when the parade was right down LaSalle Street. Well, you know, anybody could pretty much used in those days, anybody could pretty much walk in the parade. I guess you still can, but it's on it's over by Columbus Drive, which I have no interest in going. But we stayed, the guys in the floor would go out.
I saw the fugitive. I saw how you were able to walk in the parade.
Just pick up a green hat out of the garbage.
I remember Harrison Ford getting in the middle of the parade.
Yeah, well, I mean, Audrey Rand walked with the police people 1 year. And, the guys in the floor would go, and they'd all pile right into series. Then there was always somebody had an office party afterward, and then we'd end up at the, someplace on the north side, and then after that, it was a blur.
That's what I mean. Usually, that's how it kind of goes. You cut out early, you hit up a few places, and then, yeah, somehow it's midnight, and you're like, we've been drinking for 9 hours.
Absolutely.
What the hell's going on?
So somehow you wind up in your bed in the morning, and you don't know how you got there.
Well, this was a year BBK before Kevin at Notre Dame. Our sophomore year, we had the Coke cooler. So, of course, for for St. Patrick's Day, we were well prepared. We had a keg in there, right? Well, Senior Bar opened up at 7, but we weren't going over there. So all of a sudden, there's pounding on my door at like 8 o'clock. And I open the door, and there's three young ladies, and they go, "We hear you have a keg." It was Patty Ward and her gang, Big Red and the rest of that group. I said, "Well, do you mind if I at least put my pants on, for God's sake?" So they waited out in the hall for like 30 seconds, and I got myself decent and then tapped the keg, and they were happy. Then I went down and took a shower where they're drinking all the beer. So the girl, there I was, tapping the keg. "You guys mind if I get out of the hall and take a shower?" "No, go right ahead. We don't let us bother. We'll just sit here and drink." "Okay."
Yeah. Would you give that tap a bump before you go?
Yeah. Yeah, don't take too long. We don't have to pump that thing. What the hell? But you know, Blade was all happy with it, but you remember? You didn't remember the guy, our roommate. We ended up, every year we had kind of a scam, not a scam deal. We worked the order, shall we say. So we always managed to get our rooms the way we were supposed to by shifting people around, which everybody was all pissed off about, right? Because we always engineered the system better. We ended up, that was the year Frank left. So we ended up with, and we were supposed to switch when he came back. He's supposed to switch with this guy, Chuck Broyard. Chuck could have been the straightest man ever. And so he decided, because then they said, "You're not supposed to switch rooms now because it, you know, blows the system or something." So Chuck wouldn't switch. So Frank is down the hall with three other nerds, and we're stuck with this nerd. So he, whenever anything like this happened, he was just not happy. He just was not, he didn't know what we were doing. He was older than us, too. And he just was a, he just didn't fit in. And then, but he wouldn't switch either because that was against the rules. So Chuck, we're on the third floor. Nobody's going to know. Just get the hell out of here. I can't. Anyway, so we had to put up
with
him.
You know what? I mean, there's a lot of people in the world with their rules, our rules orientation.
And I know.
We're seeing that play out now.
Where? Name me anybody who obeys any rule.
In the world, people who are so willing to buy into the rules because they're the rules.
Yeah, well, it's I'm not so sure. I think we've gotten to the point where there are so darn many rules that And every administration and everybody, they decide that they deal with what they want, Kevin. It's just a strange. Hey, by the way, before we get off on all kinds of other topics, I'm looking at this. I'm going to say this has got to be one of the most even NCAAs I've ever seen. There could be any one of about 15 teams that win. Looks to me. Just saying.
Yeah, I think there's a lot too. I actually have to work on my brackets today. Because for an important reason, but I haven't spent any time on them because I had final grades for the first 8-week courses due yesterday, and of course there's always students coming in with their final projects and everything that's built into the course, so that those last days before grades are due wind up being the me doing a lot of heads down reading and writing feedback for students and all that kind of stuff. So I've kind of been zoned out for a couple of days, but now I have to get into it. And I don't know if I've told you this before, but one of my cousins who doesn't really follow college basketball much works for a Warren Buffett company. And so Mike and I have a deal. I pick the bracket, and if we get the million-dollar perfect bracket, then we're going to split the money. And about half of the time we make it out of the first afternoon and lose in the first evening, and about the other half of the time, I remember one time texting him after the first game and said, "Well, it's been fun."
Well, how many total games
so
are there?
I don't know. I may need some help, you know. So, Matt, you've been following pretty closely. Maybe you can help me with my brackets, and you can get half of my half if we win.
Happy to help. Yeah, I followed this year closer than many other years. The Big Ten's been so enjoyable. I've really followed college basketball much closer than NBA or anything else this year.
How many games total?
So that
are there?
Would cut my winnings to 250 or cut my potential winnings to 250 grand. But realistically, my potential winnings now are none. So,
well, there's 67.
Maybe we should commiserate later. We'll see.
There's 67 games, right?
Yeah, I don't. I'm trying to remember, and I have to check and see if we have to pick the play-in games. I don't think so.
Well, you sort of have to do it if you're going to pick the game after it.
Yeah, but well, usually
you have it in before the first round.
Yeah, brackets are due 11 a.m. Central Time on Friday, so they actually will give you the play-in games. You don't have to pick those.
All right, so make that 63 games. All right, so what do you suppose that there's going to be? What, there's probably going to be four games that are 95% chance of winning, all the way down to pick'ems, right? So if the average game is, you got a 75% chance of winning, which is probably high, what's 2 to the 63rd power? I mean,
it's a long shot. Buffett has never had to pay off on it.
It's almost, you have a better chance, I think, of getting struck by lightning like twice than you do, filling out a bracket. It's winning the lottery.
Well, once get struck once, it knows where to find you.
Yeah, that's true. Looking at 538, predictive analytics site that does a lot of stuff, they actually do a really good NCAA bracket prediction model every year, and they're very successful. Now, obviously, it's a lot of chalk, right? Because they're doing strictly based on odds. So over the course of the full tournament, they do really well because the chalk does end up usually winning in spite of a lot of the upsets that happen in the early rounds. The final four is usually ones and two seeds, and in the last 3 years, a one seed has won it all. They have Gonzaga far and away the favorite to win it all this year. 27.3% chance to win it all for Gonzaga. Whereas the next best team they have is Illinois, and they have them at a 14.7% chance.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know if you'd...
They're the favorite by double, roughly.
I'm not so sure.
Even though you're the heavy favorite, you're still a 1-in-4 chance of winning it all.
Well, yeah. But still, would you put... if you knew your Calcutta was going to have a $300,000 purse, would you pay 50 grand for Gonzaga? I'm not so sure I would.
I don't think I would either. I would much rather go with Illinois, for example, where I can maybe get them for half the price and know that, they still have a 14.7% chance according to the advanced stats. I mean, it's a long shot no matter what's the point, so you want to get a little bit more value. But I don't think you want to take like a 3 or a 4 seed just because they're cheaper, because I don't think they have much of a shot.
Well, I don't know how somewhere online, on the internet, in the cloud, somebody can probably, can let me know, because you get paid every game. So it's not just if you win. So if you pick somebody who's a 5 seed and they win one game, you're probably not break even. Two games, you probably are. If they make it surely if they made it to Elite Eight, you're a big winner.
Right, because a 5 seed especially is not seeded to go to the Elite Eight. So that would be, you'd be a big winner, I think, if they
made it. Yeah, I mean, what percentage, there's somewhere, they had them all up on the board, but you get, like a 1% of the pot for the first game you win. So if you win, I picked somebody who was like $250. And I think if they would have won the first game, they were probably a 13-12 seed, but they were halfway decent. It was Maryland. So they had a chance. I mean, if they'd have won the first game, I think I'd have made like $2,000 or something. But they didn't. I mean, they were close, but they were okay. But, just because you don't necessarily have to pick the winner. I mean, if you pick two teams that are 12 or 13 seeds and you get them for a few hundred bucks and your payoff's $2,000, that's not bad either.
And your payoff on Loyola when they went to the Final Four, what would that have been for you?
Well, it's gotta be pushing 15% of the pot. Because then they won all those games. I mean, I think as I recall, it was $250,000, a little bit more, and these guys paid 50 something for Phi Slamma Jamma, and their break even was making it to the Final Four. So when they got to the last two, they were up, but they didn't win. Georgetown won, right?
So Loyola is interesting this year because they're seeded as an 8 seed, and I talked about earlier this week that they're the most misseeded team based on where they're. Their ranking is based on the advanced analytics. They're actually a top 10 team according to like KenPom and Sagarin rating and things like that. But they're seeded number 8 overall, which would make you believe they're more of a top 30 or 32 team. And so, they actually, as an 8 seed, according to 538, have a 12.1% chance of making it to the Sweet 16, which I assume would pay off handsomely.
Well, it depends on what they go for. I mean, that's the point of the Calcutta. You're going to get a much better read of where they should be by how much they're paid for there.
Right. And as an 8 seed here, they have a 3.1% chance of making the Final Four, which is far and away the best of any 8 seed.
Well, just to show, I mean,
it is, but their problem is round two. Once, if they can clear round two, they're in great shape. But the, you know, they're up against, who's the number one in their bracket?
Illinois,
yeah, the second round. They would face the Illini.
Well, you know,
yeah, are they capable of knocking off Illinois? Probably, because Illinois can be a little flaky at times. Although I don't know what Loyola would do about Kofi Coburn. I mean, the guy is so huge. He, watching the game against Iowa last week, he made Luka Garza look like a small man.
Yeah, well, he was dominant, and that's really what's changed with Illinois is Kofi has found a way to stay out of foul trouble in the last month, and that's completely changed them. So now he's playing big minutes, and with him on the floor, he's 20-10. And then they've always had the great guard play all season. So where Illinois was kind of flaky earlier in the year, losing at home to Maryland, you know, barely beating Ohio at home, losing, you know, to some teams that they're clearly better than, Kofi was getting into foul trouble and was not playing very many minutes. And then, you know, teams would beat them. Now he's staying on the floor, and they're unbeatable right now the way they're playing, in my opinion. I don't think Gonzaga can beat them the way they're playing right now.
Well, they ended up last week.
They had games go to the wire too, so you know it's. I think it was yesterday. You guys observed that nobody gets a good shot at the end of it, and nobody gets a good end game shot at all. So if you can keep it tight, you can just be one shot away from beating them, and that ain't a bad place to be.
That's true.
Last week, the guy who took their center out of the game were the guards. The guy didn't score a point from halfway through the second. Halfway through the second half, they never gave him the ball.
Right, which is crazy. How you don't give that guy the ball is insane. He's unstoppable.
I have even though I tried to send it to myself, I have a feel good story in baseball that Stan Musial, who by most regards not only was, this is how weird baseball, well, any sport can be in terms of what the sentiment is. A few years ago, maybe 10 years ago, they had the 100 best players in the history of baseball. And they had to have, the league had to like say something to get Stan Musial in there as the 100th best guy. Then like 3 years ago, I read this thing about who's the greatest hitter ever in baseball, and he was number one. You know, so it's pretty odd, you know, who, depending.
Yeah, mine would be Ted Williams, but I could see Musial getting some support for that.
Well, in terms of career stats, there's no comparison with Musial and Williams, but most people would say that Williams was the best hitter, really, that they've ever seen. And but he also had 2 or 3 years in the Army, so his stats don't compare up. But
right. No, when you look at Williams, if you like going to Baseball Reference among the leaders, anything that is a rating or a percentage is going to have Williams right at the top. Anything that requires longevity, like, you know, where do you fall on the home runs list, is not going to have Williams at the top. But if you start looking at things like batting average, on base percentage, WAR, all those kinds of things, then you start to see how good a hitter he was, and he's just incredible. And the thing about Williams was that he was so insistent on getting a good pitch to hit. Now, that was always front and center with him, and it's a lesson that is lost on far too many baseball players.
Well,
real quick, I pulled up the WAR rankings, and Stan Musial, wins above replacement, is considered the 8th best player of all time. Barry Bonds and Babe Ruth are essentially tied at number one. Barry Bonds kind of passed Babe Ruth by less than one WAR point at the end of his career. There, Willie Mays number 3, Ty Cobb number 4, Hank Aaron number 5. A guy named Tris Speaker, who from the 1800s, number 6.
Tris Speaker, I know something about Tris Speaker. Tris Speaker was a guy who played center field, and he was a terrific hitter as well. But in center field, to this day, most people claim, if you look at the stats, he has no peer, compared to the people around him. Because he would average something like 40 or 50 more chances a year than anybody else in the league.
Yeah, he's considered the 6th best player in the history of baseball.
Yeah, yeah.
According to wins above replacement. Honus Wagner, number 7. Stan Musial, number 8. They have Ted Williams, number 11. But what shows me I just pulled this up. So war obviously is, you know, your wins above replacement. So longevity is very important in war. And Stan Musial,
still 11th.
Yeah, Ted Williams is 11th, only three spots behind Musial, and he had 3,200 less at bats. So he's, I mean, to me, he's way better than Stan.
Well,
Musial.
But Musial was one of those.
But
guys.
But Musial is still a top 10 player of all time.
But he was also a guy that was were all those years that he played. You can't take that away from somebody. DiMaggio the same way. I mean,
I agree. Like I said, he's a top 10 player of all time. He's that good. Yeah. But Ted Williams is that much. Is just that.
Well, as
that
a hitter,
great.
There's never anybody. But Musial had the most odd stats. What do you have? The exact same amount of hits on the road as he did at home. He had something like 40 more triples even than Willie Mays.
Yeah, he had 3,630 hits, Musial did.
Yeah, and I think like exactly...
Didn't steal any bases, though, which is kind of surprising.
Which is...
78 stolen bases.
But he was exactly like as many on the road as he did at home or something. And he had, 97 triples on the road, 97 at home? How do you go... He played mostly in that Sportsman's Park. I never saw a game there, did you, Kevin?
It was, no, I, never did.
My when did...
He played from 41 to 63.
Yeah,
that's a long time.
Well, anyway, he is considered one of the most beloved players in all baseball, and he's
got the big statue outside of Busch Stadium.
His high school, when he went to spring training his first year, he was like 19, and he was a terrific but sore arm pitcher that they played every other day in the outfield because he was such a good hitter. And finally, the guy said, "Your arm's never going to make it. Why don't you just play outfield all the time?" Well, this guy's name was Kerr. He was on the 1919 Black Sox team that wasn't I guess he wasn't good enough to pay off or whatever. So they became fast friends. He ended up being the head coach at Rice, and then he was a high school coach. And so he kind of was a little down on his luck. Well, somewhere in the 50s, Stan, and this is the reason why I bring this up, is you guys are both more in media than I am, or that he was making, they thought, $80,000 to $85,000 a year. He buys this guy cash a house in Houston for like, you know, 20 grand or something, or 15 grand. So he paid like 15% of his whole salary to buy this guy a house after tax. And the idea was he didn't want anybody to tell anybody about it. And a few years later, somebody from the Houston Chronicle broke the story. And Stan was real pissed off. But the guy said, hey, it is such an unusual story. People have to know about it. And what do you guys think about that? I don't know what to think about that.
About spilling the beans? About
a few years later.
When someone doesn't want it reported?
A few years later.
You know, I don't know. If someone asks, first of all, if you're told off the record, then it's got to stay off the record. You can't report it. You know, that might give you cause to chase after it, you know, from other avenues. But, you know, I think when you're asked to keep a confidence, you keep a confidence. You know, if you agree to it, you do it. And so, no, I'm sorry. I don't think I'd...
Yeah, no, it's, but there's, I could argue a little bit both ways, which I guess this is my job as coach. But it's just one of those things that it might have been in one of those times when everybody was just down on athletes or something. Like, I figured I needed to do something to... say they're not all idiots or something. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it does seem like a pretty nice thing to do for somebody. I know a lot of people. There's a few people on the trading floor that were like that. That would just they knew somebody was struggling, and all of a sudden, this is back when you could do this. They would just all of a sudden find out that their like gas bill of 4 months was paid, and with the idea that the gas company wouldn't tell who did it, type of thing. And I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. I mean, I can see both sides, but I mean, it's not like. It's a bad thing. I mean, you know, but
no, they're not telling something bad. But like I said, if you agree to keep a confidence, you keep a confidence.
I don't know if he ever agreed. I think Stan just wanted confidence. I mean, I can't imagine every newsman in the world lined up and said okay. But anyway, he bought this guy a house, and he and his wife lived there until in fact, the guy ended up dying in the house. I mean, so I guess that's a good thing. Didn't have to go somewhere else and be under the bridge somewhere, but.
Stan killed him by buying him a house.
Killed him. Then right. Exactly, but you know when you have these
damn
kinds
athletes.
Of, yeah, I mean when you have these sort of you know arguments about people baseball, I mean it is interesting because the amount of talent, the amount of great players as you go through all with slightly different style, all with You know, it is especially the guys that could do everything well. You know, that actually were spectacular in the field, and the five-tool player. I mean, it is so hard to do that. I mean, I can't even imagine. For the last 10 years, I've been down to a one-tool player. I can just pitch. Can't field, can't run, can't hit. So, I know the feeling. I never was a five-tool guy, but some of these guys, when you think of people like that, I mean, there's a couple of guys I played softball with that sort of are. But even those guys, as good as they look, I don't know if they're as good as these other guys. Plus, then there's the mentality thing is when you, and I used to look at a Ryan Sandberg type of guy, I watch his whole career here, and it's a 162-game season, and you're not at your best every day, no matter what people think, no matter how good a shape you're in or whatever. And so the days that you're, you know, 70% of capacity, you're still better than the other people. When you think of it that way, people are pretty darn good. I mean, there's a reserve. It's like Willie Mays. I remember somebody asking him when he was like, you know, he's like 36, and they go, Willie, do you still, you know, don't you, you're playing center field and you're not as good as you used to be? And he goes, no, I'm not as good as I used to be. I'm still the best guy on the team at center field. What do you want me to say? Right? I mean, I still belong out there today. But that's why sports is so great. You can argue about it. You can have a beer over. You can argue about back and forth. You can argue about linebackers. You can argue about everything. And, you know, that's really what's fun about it, I think. I mean, Doug Buffone said that the best when they had the strike. We were having breakfast one day, and he goes, a lot of people in my league don't understand that if we all went out and played in Beverly Park, there'd be nobody there. All the marketing, all the hype, all the football cards, all that other stuff, the talk shows, he goes, everything. That's what makes the game. It gives people something to do, and they develop interest. And, like, I'm sure, as much as I think it's a little bit bizarre, this, you know, fantasy football, talk about something that generates interest in the game. The only thing it doesn't probably detracts a little bit is the interest in every individual game. You care about just one guy, which I don't think that detracts all that much to you, Manny, but a little bit. I mean, how many of you guys that are really into fantasy ever watch a game?
Well, they watch every game, but they watch it differently.
Yeah.
They don't care about the result unless they bet on the result as well, which a lot of them do. They care more about the individual plays and statistics.
But they're not zeroed in.
But they watch every game, so they actually know more about football than probably anyone.
Oh, God, yeah.
And certainly more about every individual team than anyone, because they'll watch Thursday night, you know, Jacksonville versus Indianapolis and watch the entire four quarters.
Well, but I like to watch some of it, but comparing my knowledge to you or Thomas, what am I, 1%? You could ask me who the halfback is on Seattle, and my first answer is, why would I care? I don't watch Seattle.
Well, that's what changes it. I mean, if you're doing fantasy, you really need to know the rosters of every team to do well. And if you're putting money into it, you want to do well. And then if you're betting on the individual games, then you want to know a lot about the teams as well. And so you really do kind of become an expert in the NFL, and it's become that way more so than any other sport, where you care about all 32 teams, whereas in baseball, I don't know anything about an American League West team, because all I watch is the Cubs and White Sox, and last year, for example, all we got to see was American League Central and NL Central.
Yeah.
And that was it. I mean, I didn't know anything that was going on with other rosters.
Well, that's why I could never really understand the interleague play argument to the, quote, purists. I mean, why if I was in Kansas City and an incredible fan, I never got to see Ryan Sandberg play. I never got to see Willie Mays play. I mean, that's crazy, right?
I'm fine with interleague play, Tom. I sort of miss having that 2-week period when you did interleague play.
I do too. Yeah,
where it was kind of a spectacle,
gave a little novelty, and that's all gone.
As long as you had a chance,
the sports world is okay. I know you got to go to break. Yeah. The sports world is okay. Andy Dalton's coming to Chicago. We're in good shape.
Oh God! When we come, SP Futures down on 13, NASDAQ Futures down 131, we're leaking here before the Fed. People need to be nervous about this. We're going to talk about this when we come back. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know.
Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. A lot of what we're just talking about, what you see in baseball that you think is your best players are ones you saw, and I'm going to ask Mr. Matty a question as I go through not traffic, but the stock market here. But where is Roberto Clemente coming on that? Because I saw that guy play about eight times, and I'll tell you, I never saw a pair. He was offensively and defensively, he was the best I ever saw. But his career was cut short as well. By the way, Matty, when are you going to dump that Mercedes and get this new Ford? Has just come out with a 2021 F-150 police responder pickup truck. God, is this thing stud? I could see you in this thing. What do you think?
I'm not a truck guy.
Would she divorce you if you came home with this?
Yeah, I'm not a pickup truck guy.
It's got a huge
Roberto Clemente, by the way, in wins above replacement, the 25th best baseball player of all time.
I don't know who I'd bump, but I'd like him higher than that. Anyway, but his problem is home runs, and he played at that huge Forbes Field where you couldn't hit one out if you were King Kong.
Yeah.
Just saying. Anyway, S&P futures down 1375. NASDAQ futures down 144. Dow's hanging in there like unchanged.
Home runs were his issue though. He only hit 240. And you're right, the ballpark probably had a lot to do with that.
It was 400 feet down the lines.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's pretty far. Alright, let's do the rest of this stuff here. I've got baseball on the mind here. Next, up four, call that flat. This is the day before the day of the Fed announcement. FTSE down 35.5%, CAC around down 15.2%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 6, call that flat. Shanghai down 1, call that flat. Do you think this message is important? When I said it was dull yesterday afternoon, I meant it. Hang Seng up 6, call that flat. So everything's flat, waiting for our buddy Powell to say something. Bonds up 4 basis points, 166, this is a new high, 1 minus 0.31. Japan's actually down, 0 point. 0.09. So that's as low as we've seen that in a while. Oil down 60 cents, 64.20. Brent down 79 cents, 67.60. Natural gas down a penny, 2.54. RBOB down 3 cents, 2.06. We've got gold is down 440 to 1726, back off that 1750 number it was. Silver down 5 cents, 25.95. Copper up 2 cents, there's a 409. And we've got crypto down another 656, 54,988. And I guess this weekend they traded over 60,000 someplace. Everybody got for us, Trevi Weather Sports.
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Absolutely no accidents or stalls or significant delays to speak of, so enjoy a nice quiet commute into downtown if you're heading in this morning. Weather today, another kind of cold, dreary day. We'll get some rain later on, a high of 41. We will warm up this weekend, but the next couple of days, especially today and tomorrow, it's going to be wet, windy, and cold. Right now it's overcast and 34 with rain coming later on and a high of 41. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 73 today. Right now it's clear and 44. In sports, the Bulls got 40 points in just 30 minutes from Zach LaVine as they blew out the Thunder at home last night for their second straight win, 123-102. Blackhawks were off last night. Coyotes were shut out by the Wild, 3-0. And as Kevin teased before the break, the Bears made a free agent splash, if you want to call it that. They signed veteran quarterback Andy Dalton to a one-year, $10 million deal. He can also earn an additional $3 million in incentives. Then sources reported after the signing that the Bears aggressively pursued Russell Wilson with Seattle in a possible trade, but were told that he was not going anywhere. Chief?
Is this kind of good?
Andy Dalton?
Yeah.
No.
Well, that's a quick answer.
Well, I mean, he's had some good years in his past. Last year, I think I saw a stat comparison of 2017 through last year, which would be Mitchell Trubisky's career. Mitch has actually been better than what Dalton was, which obviously isn't saying much. So that should give you an idea. But yeah, I mean, 5-6 years ago, Dalton was a serviceable quarterback.
Yeah, now he's a backup. He's a decent backup quarterback.
But.
So I'm hoping there's another shoe to drop here because if we're going into the season with Foles and Dalton as our quarterback options, I mean, we're going to be terrible. I mean, that's just all there is to it.
Yeah, so this means the Bears need to draft a quarterback, but they're not in a great position to draft a quarterback. So they will likely have to trade up if they're going to get one of the five guys that are considered the first-round quarterbacks. And I'll tell you, I would love to, if the Bears are going to trade up or if they're going to make any maneuver to get a quarterback in the draft, I hope they get the only guy left that falls to them, because they've proven that they can't, that their own choices at quarterback are terrible, so they might as well just let everybody else, kind of let it fall in their lap and hope for blind squirrel theory to kick in.
In the last 20 to 22 years, they spent 6 number one draft picks on quarterbacks, and they've never really had a quarterback.
Yeah, that's right.
That is spectacular.
Well,
you counting some of the ones that they've traded too?
Oh, can you count them? I was going to ask you. I just did this the other night.
Count what?
Can I count the 6?
Yeah.
Oh, let me see. We gotta get the guys they've taken. So that's like your Cade McNowns and Rex Grossman.
There's two.
And who else have they? They gave up 2 for Cutler, right?
That's 2. You're very good, Kevin. You got 2 more left.
Yeah. So they have that, and of course they have Trubisky.
Now you're only missing one.
So I'm only missing one. Huh?
Yeah. I can't believe you're missing it.
Did they trade one for Rick Meyer?
Yeah. There you go. Bingo. Ding, ding, ding. That's 6. That's a lot.
Thank you for ruining an otherwise perfectly festive day.
After we're just talking good about baseball, we go down that road. The funny part about their management of these people is so bizarre. I remember Rick Meyer, they're getting him, and they said, you know, he hasn't developed because we didn't think he got the right coaching, and they had just hired some guy who was a whiz guy, quarterback, a guru on the coaching staff, and they said, we're probably not going to play Meyer like this whole year because we're going to reteach him everything. We think he's got the potential. In what, the third game, they threw him to the Wolves. He was lousy, and then they cut him or something. They did exactly the opposite.
They had him, and who was the other quarterback? Was it Eric Kramer at the time, or was it somebody else?
I think it might have been Kramer.
And Kramer was solid.
But yeah. they created, this was Wonstadt, and they created the quarterback controversy. Now, usually when there's a controversy for a quarterback, one guy's happy, that's the starter, and the other guy is not happy. Because he's not playing, and Wonstadt managed to keep both guys unhappy.
Well, by the way,
the rare feat.
That is a rare feat. The Bears are projected, or the Bears currently have the 20th draft pick in the upcoming draft. It's considered a 4-quarterback draft with, you know, maybe 1, maybe 2 pan out. That's usually how it goes. But 4 will be taken in the top 10, according to most mock drafts. Of course, number 1 will be Trevor Lawrence, who is considered by most to be kind of a can't miss. The number 2 guy recently has been Zach Wilson out of BYU. A lot of people really like, and in a lot of mock drafts, he's projected to go number 2 to the Jets. And then the number 3 guy, this guy Trey Lance out of North Dakota State, has really, you know, sort of come out of nowhere, and now people are saying the Falcons are going to take him with the number 3 overall pick. That's an interesting one. And then the 4th guy, of course, is Justin Fields out of Ohio State, who's dropped a little bit recently, but is still projected to go in the top, you know, 5 or 6. So the Bears are quite a ways away from getting into the top 5 or 6, but that's what they'd have to do.
Right. So the number 5 guy is Mac Jones from Alabama.
Yep, that's right.
Who will not be high in the first round, but may not last to 20.
Yep, he would be that's exactly right. He would be the guy. Right now he's projected to go number 12. Or so. So that's a little more reasonable if you needed to trade up or wanted to trade up, but I don't know if he's worth doing that.
I don't know. I like him a lot. He doesn't have the raw talent that the guys above him have, but he is one of those guys. It sort of reminds me of Jim McMahon in this regard, with that he just knows how to play.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He was damn good with those Alabama weapons.
Well, we were retiring one of the greatest quarterbacks ever in Drew Brees after 20 years, and nobody wanted him, right?
Right, and he had a terrible first.
This was a second round pick, yeah, and then when he wasn't panning out, and the San Diego drafted what's his name, just retired from the Colts,
Philip Rivers.
Yeah,
Philip Rivers, and they had to make a choice, and they got they kept a good guy in Philip Rivers, but I don't think Philip Rivers is as good as Drew Brees.
Drew Brees, his first 3 years were really bad. I think he threw as many interceptions as he did touchdowns. And then he signed for a very team-friendly contract with New Orleans, and then he just took off from there. And then, like you said, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, top 5 or 6 quarterback of all time, probably based on numbers.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey, Kevin, let's shift to every man in the market and what's going on. I've been in the studying this stuff for an awful long time. I don't think I've ever seen a time, well, other than maybe the late 70s or something, where Fed policy and what's going on, where the government is out on a limb as far as they are. And I'm not saying they're wrong, but what I will say is they never should have got here. I mean, that's the problem. But desperate times call for desperate measures, I guess. But What did Adam Cartwright say?
The problem is, when you're not in desperate times, you should be preparing for desperate times.
Well, we're never going to do that.
That's something that we never did.
What was Adam Cartwright's greatest quote on Bonanza? Most acts of heroism are really acts of quiet desperation.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Something along those lines. And anyway, I don't see how this dude is going to be able to have this press conference today. I mean, everything you read is they've shifted gears so much. They're pouring so much money in. They're bailing people out. They're essentially bailing the government out. I mean, he doesn't have the backbone to say, "I'm giving you 8% or 5% increase in the money supply this year. You guys deal with it. If you want to spend $1 trillion, you better find out who to borrow it from, because you're not getting it from me. Because I'm as far as I can go." But they're not doing that. I mean, they've all bought into this. It's either going to be something that, well, they're going to say it worked no matter what. But I'm starting to get stuff from both the right and the left questioning exactly what's going on here. And, you know, when I was in high school, I don't remember this because I remember the whole class was laughing. The teacher was all pissed off. We were in Latin class, and Bob Command was the guy's name, was our teacher. And he wasn't much of a Latin teacher, and we didn't want to learn, so it was a great combo. Because I didn't want to learn any
Latin. He wasn't much of a teacher, and we didn't want to learn anyway.
So we didn't want to learn any Latin, let's put it this way. So they had this film on about, you know, like a documentary of what Rome was like in those days. And they got all these guys, like, walking to the forum, the senators. And there's all these, you know, what they would be today, you know, a homeless. Well, in the old days, they were hippies or beatniks. Now they're homeless or something. And they're all on the side of the road pounding on these stone tablets, increase the dole. Increase the dole. Which the dole, the Roman dole, for those that don't know, was actually the first really documented welfare system. Where if you lived in Rome, you didn't have to really work anymore, they would just give you a certain amount of grain per day that came in from the provinces. So it got to the point where the people in Rome didn't work, or actually weren't even the soldiers anymore. You farmed all that out to the places you had conquered. So clearly over time, that's one of the things that made Rome, that's why, was it pomp and circumstances? Or was it fruit and, what was the guy used to say, the restaurant show? Used to do the restaurant reviews here in Chicago? Something in circumstances. Anyway.
I know what you're talking about, but it's
basically you had the dole, and on the weekends you went to the gladiator fights, and that's what kept the population happy. And what we're seeing here, and I read something last week that was really very troubling, if it's true, from the political side. And again, everybody knows I'm not a Trump guy at all, but I read something that actually sounded like it was, you know, okay. Now, I don't think it would have swung the election. I mean, I don't know. What did Biden win by? 2%? 1%? I don't know. But they were saying how many people voted just to get their $1,400 check that Trump couldn't get through the Senate. I mean, he wanted a $2,000 check, right? Or at least he said he did. Who knows if he really did, but he said he did. And the Senate basically cut it to $600. Wasn't that the drill, Kevin and Manny? The last check? And, so they said the amount of people who just want their four. I know it sounds really awful, but it really does. The more I read this, if I was going to write a column for the Wall Street Journal, I would actually have to put it in there. This sounds like a bunch of people sitting at the table with a huge prime rib and winging the bones to people like us on the floor, like we're the dogs. Because the amount of people getting so much money out of this thing.
And the dogs are sitting there going, increase the toll.
Yeah, and the dogs are happy as a clam, just like my buddy Scruff would have been if I wung him a prime rib bone. You know, but I don't think, first of all, in some ways, Scruff was cleverer than us, but I don't think we're dogs, and we're being treated like it, and we're not being told the whole part, and the numbers are so big that half, it's like me doing my checkbook with Scruff sitting next to me. He had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I don't think, I'm trying as best I can, and I've got some education behind me. I can't understand these numbers, Kevin. What are we doing? You know, we're 100 billion here, 100 billion there for masks and vaccinations that cost $15 a throw. And you can buy 10 masks at Walmart for $5. What are we doing with these hundreds of billions? I mean, who's getting all this money? And who the hell's going to pay for it? I'm so lost.
Where's my $1,400?
As long as I get my check, I'm okay. But I would hope that with all the money we pay for in education in this country, not that people learn much, well, I think they do, but everybody should be able to sit there and go, okay, wait a minute. Where's my calculator? What's $1.9 trillion divided by how many households we have? 122 million? What does that come out to? 20 grand or some huge number? I mean, 18 grand, 17 grand. I'm saying, okay, we're going to get a check for three, which is what the normal household is probably going to get, right? 1,400 times two plus 500 for the kid. And a household is 2.3 people, so it's actually not even that much. So, all right, they'll say, now I'm getting three, and I owe somebody 16. Where's the math on that? Who the hell's getting the rest? And, oh, by the way, are the people who are getting 10 times as much as me, in the next 20 years, are they going to pay 10 times as much as me as taxes? And we know the answer to that is friggin' no. And yet we're still putting up with it because we get our bone. What is the matter with us collectively?
That's a good question, and that's a fair question. So if we if we want to start a new political party, will we call it the What the Hell's the Matter with Us Party?
Might work. We'd have to shorten it up somehow. We'd have to have maybe...
Just a WTF party?
Yeah. What were we getting...
Just something I wanted to get into, because you've talked about the import containers and the flow of import-export containers.
That was from our buddy Dan Janitas last Thursday.
Yeah. So just a little bit of data. If you look at U.S. exports, U.S. trade with China, the U.S. has actually, it was $39 billion in January 2021, compared to $41 billion in January, actually almost $42 billion in January 2020. So we're doing a little bit less, and in fact, we were very much spiked up on imports from China over the last half of the year. It was, 40.6, 40.8, 41.2, 44.8, 44.8, 44.9. So, January, we actually fell a little bit. But also our exports to China they're down a little bit in January, but they were up, late in the year as well. The problem is that China started its export boom, in 2020, and by the end of the year, after months of exporting three times, just from a container count standpoint, at the end of the year, after months of exporting three times as many containers as imports, that were coming back, because China had its economic recovery from COVID sooner than others. They were getting slowed down because they couldn't get their hands on containers. So part of what Dan, had mentioned, what he was observing, is that China was sort of like, U-Haul when it doesn't have enough trucks in one place, and they'll do anything to get the trucks back. Say Chicago area doesn't have enough trucks to cover the rental demand, then they'll do anything that they can to get get trucks back into the Chicago area. Cheap one-way rentals, paying people to transport them, whatever it takes. And China's been doing the same thing. They've been importing empty containers just because they need them so badly.
Well, it's the
that's the big reason why so many containers are going back to China empty, is because they spent the last half of 2020 sending them out without getting them back, and now they need them back.
Well, and I think that it's definitely a lagging indicator, is what you're saying. What Dan's talking about is, probably a 5 to 6 month ago problem, or 4 months. But still, it's not like we stopped buying stuff from there because we just want it cheaper. We don't care.
Oh yeah, and that point stands. That's loud and clear. I'm right with you on that.
We don't do
much ethical buying anymore. And we don't let that influence our buying habits anymore, and that's a damn shame. There was once a strong Buy American movement. And you've described that on other shows, and I think that goes so far. I'm not necessarily in the always Buy American camp, but I do think I won't buy a Nike product. There are a number of products I won't buy, and like you, I'm doing my best to avoid Amazon, but that's a hard cord to cut. Once you've gotten hooked on it, so there's a lot of work we need to do. But I think you're right. People don't care if it's cheap. I'm buying it, and I wish we would give a little more consideration to labor situations. And it's not just China. You can go to Indonesia if you really want to see where Nike's bad. It's their operations in Indonesia, where they pay substandard wages.
Well, in the from what I read, this doesn't mean it's totally gospel. And this is like a year or so ago, that when they raised the minimum wage, one of the places that was left out or whatever, funneled out, whatever you want to call it, was American Samoa. And just so happens, there's a huge, it's either Starkist or Chicken of the Sea, one of the two of them, plant and a canning facility in American Samoa that just happens to be a big investment from Nancy Pelosi's husband. And now, their idea was that if you made us pay more in Samoa, that we'd have to move the plant to, you know, God knows where. I mean, some other island over there. I don't know the geography that much.
And then they'd have no jobs.
Yeah, then they'd have no jobs.
We're really benevolent.
Yeah, we're really benevolent. And we have to keep our shirt buttoned. We don't want our heart popping out of our chest, as my uncle used to say. So, I mean, there's always a reason to either not pay somebody or to pay yourself more, right? People don't change in that regard. But, you look at this stuff, Kevin, and our outrage, and the thing of it is, I think a lot of times people are fairly moral. I mean, you don't want the governor groping people because he's the governor, and I don't either. I mean, even though I question some of the people questioning, the last thing I want to go see more is Jay Pritzker, who's supposed to be a guy that's a real guy, messing with some lady at a party. I mean, you're not supposed to do that. No matter who you are, you're not supposed to do that. But clearly not if you're... I mean, when I...
Well, and how long have we known? When did sexual harassment really come to the fore in the Clarence Thomas hearings?
Yeah.
And so what was that, 1980s, 90s?
And you were... Before that... It was known.
Late 80s.
It
was late 80s.
Yeah.
So we knew about it before, but it really became a big issue and everybody got on it. You know, all the businesses got on it and the legal environment got after it. And so we've known this. This is not just you ought to know better. This is something that has been, baked into the world of work for 30 years.
But what was that?
People need to, and the answer is just, you cannot, your position of power is a significant, is significant, and so even if you say you're just joking, which I don't buy for a second from Cuomo, he was trolling, he was, if there was any reciprocation, he was on it. But the discomfort people feel isn't just that this guy's, icky or, whatever you think about him. The discomfort they feel is, I can't push back on this because he controls my job.
Oh, sure. And it's, no one would ever say that's okay. The thing that I have a real problem with is people have been able to defend themselves. Let's put it this way. If the head of XYZ button manufacturer, if he grabs some girls behind at a Christmas party and it hits public opinion, everybody's going to say that, oh, by the way, you shouldn't buy buttons from Matt Weber. Matt would never do that. But yet you can have somebody say, God, in China, they're pulling people's husbands away from the place, dropping some Chinese guy in there and saying he's your new husband and they're enslaving the guy. Don't say that because we still need our blue jeans cheaper. I can't get the selective morality is the part that bothers me.
Absolutely, 100% on that.
Whatever. Anyway, SP futures down 15. NASDAQ futures 155. Come back with Mr. Russell Rhodes, and we'll talk a lot more about the volatility and everything that's affecting the market right now, or isn't affecting. And what's this afternoon going to look like? Kevin, thank you. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson, at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
There's something happening here.
Lord, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes with us. S&P futures down on 1650. NASDAQ futures down 157. So we're leaking here somewhat. Russell, how are you?
I'm doing okay. It'll be back to green by the time we're done talking.
Probably by the dip. so you're pretty tight with your whatever. What are you, Napertucky? That's your town?
It sure as hell feels like it. Clantonville.
So you're real tight with
Clarendon Hills.
Clarendon Hills. You were on the school board there. Are you tight with the police?
I was on the school board, and yeah, I know a couple of the police in Hinsdale, in a positive way.
Well, if I were you, if they're making an order, why don't you get your name on one of these F-150 police pickups? They look pretty sharp.
I would love one of those.
I bet you could get in there. It's a commercial build, but you know they claim they'll even take the center console out if you want to put your police stuff in there.
Ooh!
Saying, yeah. This thing looks pretty studly.
Could I get out on like 290 and get down there in like 15 minutes?
Well, you can't. Well, if you had the lights on, probably get people out of your way.
Yeah. No, I mean when I was at Utes, as you like to put it. There was an ambulance for sale at a used car lot, and a bunch of us in high school tried to get together and collect up enough money to buy the ambulance. I don't really know why that seemed like a good idea.
I know why. You're going to put the lights on and drive fast.
Well, that was the first thing before we started trying to figure out if we could buy the darn thing. They had me call the lot, and I said, "Do the lights still work?" And, "Yeah, lights still work." "Okay, that's all we need to know."
God, it sounds like something you and your basketball team would do, Maddie, when you're late for the game.
Yeah.
Just saying. Hey, I have a question before we get into the volatility stuff. And please, don't anybody take this as a recommendation to buy and sell or anything like that. But the two stocks yesterday that were, I was thinking about doing something, were CrowdStrike and what's the other one? COUP. I don't know what the darn thing is. And so I'm looking in there and, you say, well, I'm looking at CrowdStrike here, these guys are what they're what are they? What do they do, man? They're the guys with the cloud, right? Isn't that what their thing is? What do they do here?
I'm not familiar.
Provider of cloud deliverance solution for endpoint protection. What the hell does that even mean?
That means trust our cloud stuff to protect you, which I don't. Cloud scares me, but.
So I'm looking at this thing now. They're trading $200, which is where everybody is. Every stock's $200, right?
Yeah.
Guess what their revenue per share is?
Oh, let's see. If it's $200, I'd say less than $5.
$4. $4.02.
Yeah.
And of course their return on equity is minus 11%. So I don't ever take my advice on somebody that I don't think about them. I just said that, but If mm-hmm. this stock was $15, I wouldn't look at it twice, or 20. I mean, who says it's? And if it drops to 195, you know somebody's going to say it's on sale. On sale for what? I mean, well, this is so 1999. I mean, my clients, you know, a lot of them are this is not the stocks they're in, right? So I stare at the same, mm-hmm. The Dow stocks and the S&P stocks and the Apples, those kinds of things. That's where all my people are. And there's some people, the younger people are doing a lot of options and these other things, and they're making some money at it, actually. But I in 1999, I always thought that when things got to, like, 10 or 12 times sales, that even in 19, maybe some of them got to 20 times sales in, like, Cisco and those kinds of things. They're trading 60. Well, they were 10, and their sales were, like, 6. But some other guys made it to 15, 20. It was like crash time. This thing is 50 times sales. I mean, it's not even on the same planet. I mean, if this thing dropped $50 in the next week, why would anybody think it was a buy? I mean, just on the numbers.
They wouldn't if they did not know where the stock had been before. And that's the problem. And what I just said is not how you should be looking at stocks anyway. You should start out with your quiz question for me this morning, which was, what are they doing in sales, or what are they doing in earnings? And then, what do you think that should be worth? And then go check the stock price and go, holy crap, I should probably short that.
Yeah, but
but the thing is, you anchor yourself relative to that $200 price. And that's one of the reasons you have folks that, when the stock drops from 200 to even like 190 or so, there will be people that feel like, oh, cool, I loved it at, I liked it at 200, I'm going to love it at 190.
Well, this other one I looked at, and I'm just doing this for the first time, I'm going through it here just because you're, Coup, COUP, Coupa Software is a provider of business spend management solutions. I'm not too sure what that is. It offers a comprehensive cloud, BSM platform that has connected over 1,000 organizations with more than 5 million suppliers globally. The platform provides visibility into and control over how companies spend money. Okay. These guys are trading $270. Revenue per share, $7.90. Return on equity, minus 24%. Now, I know...
Yeah, but it's the cloud, man.
Yeah, it's the cloud. It's the same as...
I guess is one of our versions of 99, and it's the internet.
How many click-throughs? Yeah, the internet. How many click-throughs?
Oh, God, yeah. We used to have click count, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. So I remember I was on one of the TV stations, and they said, well, what do you think about the click-throughs and the advertising? And I said, well, if you take that to its logical end, if you went down to Marshall Fields, they wouldn't charge you anything for the stuff. They just have a million banners hanging around the place to send you to other places to buy other stuff. And they looked at me like I was nuts. I said, "Well, how do you make no money on what you do, and only make money on clicking people through to somebody else? I mean, how far does that go?
Mm-hmm.
We should all walk around like NASCAR drivers, right? with a million little advertising things on ourselves,
with ads all over us.
Yeah,
isn't that the direction that we're kind of going in the world that?" You always have something to... I just started to say they're probably trying to figure out how to sneak into our house, but they already did, because if I say something about a Rolex in front of one of the 10 Alexas that are in this house, I'm going to start getting ads on Instagram for Rolexes immediately.
Why do people not have a problem with that? Or am I just being really old school?
I do have a little bit of a problem with it.
You just can't convince anyone?
You know why? Because like everything else in life, you balance the pros and the cons behind that one. And the con is, okay, so, know what I'm thinking about buying, and they're sending me ads. Some people may even take that as a positive. And, I just know that in the next 2 hours, I'm going to get an ad for an F-150 truck after you and I talked about it.
Well, you've got the same issues.
But the other side of that, the pro side of that is, I can ask Alexa to, crank up the Frank Sinatra when nobody else is in the house, or find out what the weather's going to be tomorrow. So there's really a convenience factor as well. So it's a balance of those two things.
Well, you see,
that's why people are okay with it.
It sounds to me like you, like myself, have not learned how to deal with, I just have the significant other. Well, you have, what, how many more females sprinkled around the place?
Three humans and three dogs. Everybody's female.
See, now you need to turn this bus around, and I can't do it either. You got to turn this bus around where you need to walk in and say, I love this, Alexa. It is so convenient that the minute I say something about needing Viagra, that the thing pops up with a Viagra. I'm just saying. You need to say how much you love it because how much it knows everything about you. Because then everybody around you will say they don't want it. If you say you don't want it, then they want it. That's just the way the world is. You've got to absolutely say, and I can't bring myself to do that. I don't have the filter to say, if you really like this light fixture, what you really need to say is, I hate this one. Right? If you want it in your house.
And I need to be using reverse psychology?
At least try it.
on a massive scale?
On a massive scale.
Because nothing else has worked.
So no, nothing else has worked.
Going in that direction.
I mean, I'm tempting to try that. I gotta change my whole way of doing it. You can't say, isn't that a neat truck? I hate that truck. But you gotta say, God, I hate that truck. You know.
Don't you think that both of us were a little too late in life to redo our game?
Yes, we're way too late. Our game is weak and old. What can I say? Anyway, this is the greatest baseball game in the history of the world because I just saw it. This is one of the most bizarre times in the Fed, not only in my lifetime, that I've ever read about. I mean, this game they're pulling here, or they're all in on, clearly is. But I think I'm feeling cracks here. I mean, this Powell now, people are starting to ask him questions because his stuff doesn't match up what he's saying. I mean, even the young lady on CNBC who's usually into the Fed pretty heavy, boy, we sure seem to have gone quickly from no inflation to temporary inflation, haven't we? Has anybody else noticed the change but me? She says the other day, hey, you know, and I'll ask you because you're the professor, when you have... used car prices up 11.4% last year, and inflation is either temporary or transitory. Does that mean that it goes back the 11, or that the 11 up 11 is the new level?
Well, see, I think temporary. They're two different. They have two different meanings there. Temporary means that we're expecting it to go back down. Transitory means that we're switching from one, in what we use the volatility space as the term regime, we're going from one regime to another. And if we're transitory, I think that means inflation is going to, it's coming. It's a big old dark storm cloud that's been off in the distance for a decade, but it's coming.
Well, just real quick on the way the math is done, and tell me if I'm wrong. I don't think I am. If you have, say new cars are 5% of the basket. Just pick a number because that's easy. And all of a sudden, one year your F-150 goes up 15%. Okay, but then it stays steady for 5 years. Well, the next year, it's going to be 6 or 6.5% of the basket, and now it doesn't move. Right, so it actually is a detractor on the inflation the next few years.
Yeah.
Even though you never actually got the 15% bulge in it the year when it was considered lower. So whenever stuff like this happens, not just it's people cheating, just the formula kind of sucks, I think.
Mm-hmm. The methodology and the it gets all. And how often do they rebalance the basket of goods?
I'll tell you what, it's taken healthcare, since I've been talking about it in the air with Maddie Weber for 10 years, it's moved from, well, what did I used to say, Maddie, 5.5 to like 7.4. So even though it's 20% of the economy and growing, it has managed to move its way up. You know, you could probably add another part in there where they actually split the medical part out from the insurance. Insurance they have is less than your cable bill. It's like 1.2%. Your cable bill is like 1.4 or something. So, I mean, anybody thinks that's normal. But, I mean, a lot of it is...
Yeah, that's not normal. And I, you know, I work at a place that's really generous with the benefits, and I hope my cable bill's not more than what they take out of my check.
Well, one of the things, and I lost it someplace. It's probably buried in some email I sent to somebody. A young lady on CNBC 2 years ago said in the last, it was 10 or 20 years, it was a while ago, so I read it, that even if you're, say your hospitalization is paid for XYZ, and, you know, and you're pretty far up the chain, I'm not going to say where, but pretty far up the chain, that I'm going to guess, even for you, in the last 10 years, that you're, they want, if you want the dental, it's now not included, you got to pony up $50 a month. There's changes mm-hmm. that have caused you to contribute, correct? No matter what the plan.
I believe so.
Yeah.
It's kind of tough for me because I keep jumping jobs, but the longest time I've been at a couple of places, yeah, they would switch things around a little bit, and it was shuffling chairs around on the deck of the, I don't want to say Titanic, but it was shuffling them around, and I was getting all the same stuff. There were the same number of chairs, but somehow it's costing more.
Well, we ended up, we don't have as many people as a PTI we used to because we did a lot more trading, but every year, I mean, my brother used to do this all the time, and we finally hooked on with Bob Cerrone's firm, they took care of all of that for us. But in the beginning, like the Bible, we paid for everything, and it would say it was, you know, whatever, it was $1,000 a month a person, okay? And then after like 10 years, we would say, okay, we're paying for what now is considered to be, from Bob's firm, this is the base package that all the good firms get their people. And if somebody wants, you know, eyeglasses, or somebody wants, you know, all of it starts to be a little more a la carte. So at the end of the decade, I'm going to say, we're still paying our $1,200 or something, or maybe ours went up to $14 or $15. But to get the everything we originally were paying for at $1,000, you know, the better dental plan, the workman's comp plan that was better than you normally have. The things we used to provide, now everybody else is paying $200-$300 a month to get that. Anyway, her article was that if you look at what the contributions were in the last 10 or 15 years of people that allegedly have everything paid for, those, your salary didn't keep up with those contributions, much less if you had to pay for the whole thing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, which is pretty interesting. In other words, the $3,000 raise that people got was sucked up by the $300 a month they now had to contribute to their medical. And, but I mean, the example I sort of use is you're in Clarendon Hills, if all of a sudden they said, okay, you're in like in Chicago and it's going to cost you $300 to now park in front of your own house for a permit. Now, of course, that's not even in there because they don't take permits. But if they did, this $300 comes out of nowhere. It's not counted any place because it's not there, right?
Yeah.
It's not in the... But now the next year, if they put it in there and it's still $300, there's no inflation. So even if you wanted to do the job correctly, it's a tough job. I guess it's a long way to get.
It's a very difficult job, but when you connect so many things to CPI, you've got to, you know, you probably should. And I'm talking about like our out here, our teachers' raises are based on CPI, and you know, plus a little bit of something. When you base things on that, they probably should take a little bit more care as to making sure it's grounded in reality.
I'm going to say that most I don't know what yours is because you're on the board. It might be different. I think the teachers in Chicago, I think there might, man, is there a minimum that's got to be at least 3% the raise or 2.5?
It is. There's a, well, I can tell you that it's an either or. It's like, and this is a hypothetical, so don't quote, but 1% or, you know, it's actually the way that we had it when I negotiated the contract was it was the December CPI from year to year. So it was the 1 month, which 1 year we had like a little spike in inflation in December, which caused an increase in salaries that the teachers were happy about. But it's an either or. It's like 1% or CPI.
Well,
I think that's kind of a standard way to go about negotiating it. So you know, in the city of Chicago, it's probably probably a higher base, and then just in case, a CPI kicker as well.
Which I don't have any issue with, because I happen to like teachers and anybody who's doing that kind of work, but any kind of work, really. But the fact, but when you're being paid for from the rest of the population, and the rest of the population is not getting a raise, if you have a third grade mentality when it comes to math, you're going to say, we can't do this too many years or we got a problem. And somehow that seems to be missing. Is it we don't care? Is it they've got the power, we don't? Is it because we can't add? I don't know. Maybe that's it. How many people, I just talk about this with Kevin, how many people in this country are doing the math and saying, my $1,400 check is whatever, it's one one-hundredth, not 1/100th, it's probably, if I'm an individual in a household, it's essentially less than 10% of what I'm going to have to pay in taxes over the next 10 years to make up for it. I mean, I'm starting to see a little of that. What are your students asking you about this thing? It's got to be, and I know you're teaching good economics, but let's just say current events are trumping economic theory at this point. Somebody's got to ask you. I mean, I was in class with Milton Friedman, and we didn't go too far in because we're teaching a class nobody wanted to learn. It was price theory of all things. It was all calculus, all graphs. Most people, when you do a graph, you'd have, I'm guessing you have two or three lines on the graph, right? Milt was a guy, he had like 30 of them on there. You couldn't even read the darn things. I mean, so nobody wanted to look at any of that stuff. So the minute you could get the guy off topic on the current events, somebody did. It's because nobody wanted to listen to the other crap. One of these days, I'll show you the book. It's more like a manuscript. And you sit there and go, somebody used this to teach class? It was like, he admitted he never finished it, but he was 90% of the way there, so he taught it anyway. Anyway, but it was serious price theory. But I mean, I don't remember any of this stuff. I guarantee you that one millionth of a percent of the population has any idea what the hell he's talking about in there, and I don't anymore, unless I pull it out and started going through it. But I mean, don't they, when they drop you off on the current events, where do they drive you? Are they asking about this stuff?
Oh, they're no. They're asking me about how do I find the next GameStop.
Really?
Seriously. Oh, yeah. That's kind of stuff that I get. And it's really funny because from week to week, I tell them that I don't trade individual stocks. I trade derivatives based on VIX, and I trade broad-based index stuff, and that's it. I don't look at individual stocks. And then inevitably, today, I will get a question about, what do you think about this stock? I'm like, I don't look at individual stock. I mean, that's because I try to stay on topic with all of that. But that's the number one thing that I get asked. And I don't dive into that one. Really, it's headline stuff on CNBC that I get asked about more than anything else. I've been trying to emphasize that they should understand what inflation is, that it will happen a few times, in big bursts over the life of their careers. And I get a lot of blank stares and boredom around that one. I also, if I've got to use anything above 1% on an interest rate, they'll tell me that's not grounded in reality. And I'm like, well, yeah, but it will be. Just, wait. Rates will go back up. At some point, you might be my age, but
is that something?
But they don't fix it. I think maybe they don't fixate on the things that will have negative impacts on them yet, because they haven't had to experience them in reality, and a lot of them don't come from family backgrounds where they've had to deal with any sort of hardship around that.
Is it really such that? I mean, I guess a lot of people, if you've never seen, I mean, I suppose if you're an Eskimo, you can't really, talk to them too much about what it's like to be in the sands of Saudi Arabia. I mean, or the other way around. I mean, is it, if you've never really seen inflation, is it something you can explain?
The way that I explained it, I'm certain that I've talked about it in front of you before. I use car prices. If you can see that the 2020s are going away and the 2021s are going to be bumped up by 5 or 10%, you know, that gives you an incentive to go out there and buy a car now and maybe take on more of a loan to buy that car now than waiting for next year's model that's going to cost more. Because when I turned 16 in the early 80s, so we were on the tail end of inflation. And, you know, starting at around 14, I'm looking at car ads, getting all excited about becoming old enough to drive. And it's very discouraging when you're really fixated on the price of cars and they go up by more than you as a 15-year-old working in the summers is making, you know?
Yeah, oh yeah.
So that was my first, and it didn't impact me directly because we ended up working something out around all of that. My parents helped me, but that's the little story that I tell them is that something continued to look like it was out of reach to me on an absolute dollar basis, and it was, you know, staring me in the face with car ads on the weekends in the paper.
Well, you can also do it. Because those guys are in the age of, well, they're not getting married yet, but imagine if every year, you know, you get married and you want to buy a house, and the houses are 100 grand.
Yeah.
So you save up 20,000 for the down payment. You and your wife working hard and working overtime, and all of a sudden the next year the house is 150 and you need another 10 and you still can't buy it. Right? I mean, you get to the same spot.
Yeah. And then you buy more of a house than you should. And you go to refinance, and they tell you you can't refinance because the price has gone down.
I think that there's real problems, you know, refinancing in the city right now. I think the appraisals are all dropping like a stone.
Well, I'm sure the appraisals are dropping, and my assumption is rates are going up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about people who should have...
Not a lot, but a little bit. But.
Yeah. You probably don't want the guys that made out, which probably was never a decision that you would tell your class or your family to make. The people who really made out on the mortgages in the last 20 years are the ones that took the short-term ones, you know, that were, you know, half over LIBOR or a point over LIBOR, mm-hmm. or something, you know, because you don't want to do those because, oh my God, it's going to go up and you're going to get caught. Well, it's done nothing but go down, right? I mean, the one you'd never tell anybody to do with ended up being the right answer, right? S&P futures down 1275, NASDAQ futures down 145, so we're, actually, the June contract is now 148, so we're flipping to the June this week from the March. I'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Professor Russell Rose with us. S&P futures down 12. NASDAQ futures down 146. We've come up a little bit on the break time here. Not that much. We've got, interested. The big story of the day here, I think, as we'll get to now that Russell is here, is these bands. Dow futures are up 22.
By the way, Chief, can you hear the bagpipes? I think, is that your establishment downstairs playing those at 7:30 in the morning?
Probably.
Gotta love it.
Nothing wrong with the bagpipes.
Of course not.
You ever see a bagpipe group?
Yeah, many times.
Those guys they're all big, huge guys. You gotta put a lot of air in those things.
Big, with big kilts.
Oh yeah, the big kilts. The Irish Rovers, all those guys, I mean, there isn't a guy there that's like 6'2", like 260. I mean, they're huge guys.
Exactly the guys you want to see in a skirt.
Yeah, just saying. But you're not going to mess with them in the skirt, though, necessarily. When you're up to DAX up 2, call that flat. Footsie's now down, though. 34 points, 0.5. It's dropped. Well, stuff's been going on over here. CAC round down 9.1%. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 6, flat. Shanghai up down 1, flat. Hang Seng up 6, flat. So you think they're all watching our numbers here? Here's the number, though. The bond's up 5/32 at 1.67, which I think is as high as it's been. The bond minus 0.29 now. Japan actually down 0.09. But still, we've got, we'll get to the TLT here in a second. Oil down 73 cents, 64.07. Brent down 93 cents, 67.46. Natural gas down 2 cents to 2.54. RBOB now down 4 cents to 2.05. Gold's down a little bit. Gold's down $1.60. Silver down 4 cents, 25.95. Copper up 2 cents, 4.09. And we got our crypto down now $477 at 55.167. But the interesting one is this TLT. I'm sorry, the TLT is down $1.25. That's the, if you want to trade, interest rates like bonds on the security side, that's like a 20-year bond ETF. It used to be a Lehman Brothers. I don't know who does it now, but I've been bearish on these bonds now for a while, as everybody knows, and I've had probably 4 spreads in there that I'm trying to take a little bite out of the apple. I hit a single and I've had 4 winners in a row. And I've told you when I've had losers, but these wouldn't have been winners. So I put another one on the other day. A little cheapy because now it's down a little bit. And of course, yesterday I'm tempted to pile on. And I'm thinking, okay, you've had 4 in a row. This one looks good. Don't be an idiot and pile on. You get flagged for piling on, as they say in football, Manny. Of course, I didn't do it. And I think it's getting hammered this morning. Down to trade 125. And, yuck, I should have piled on, Manny. What do you got for us, traffic, other sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still pretty quiet if you're coming in on the Edens and Kennedy. Some normal traffic volume starting to build up, but nothing out of the ordinary there. Edens looks good. Eisenhower is quieter than normal. Stevenson traffic starting to build as you're heading inbound. Southside expressways, we had an earlier crash on the Ryan Express lanes northbound between or just before 35th Street, which is exit 55A. That crash has been cleared, but there's some stop-and-go traffic on the inbound Ryan Express lane, so keep that in mind. Outbound side looks okay. I-57 and the Bishop Ford have been quiet all morning. Off the expressways, looks like we have a crash Medina Road at Irving Park in the western suburbs, but that's our only accident in the area outside of that earlier crash that's been cleared on the Ryan Express. Weather today, lots of clouds early, some rain later on, cold temperatures, a high of 41. Right now it's cloudy and 35 degrees downtown. We'll have some rain later on too, as I mentioned, so it's going to be cold, windy, and wet for the next 2 days before things turn around this weekend. For our Phoenix listeners, no such worries. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 73 today. Right now it's clear and 45. In sports, the Bulls have won two in a row. They blew out the Thunder last night, 123-102. Blackhawks were off last night. They're back in action tomorrow night. Coyotes lost to the Wild, 3-0. And in NFL news, as we talked a lot about in the first hour, the Bears signed veteran quarterback Andy Dalton to a one-year, $10 million deal. Cheap.
How big a news can it be when you say he's no good?
Well, it's news because it's the first thing they've done to basically signify that Mitchell Trubisky is gone and they're going with Foles and Dalton as it stands right now.
Well, back when you used to get the full Tribune, the page I always missed before the fantasy guys, the thing I always paid attention to is there'd be a summary of every team, Russell, and they'd say, they lost, they picked up. And it always was like the really good teams would lose like five or six guys and maybe pick up a couple. And the crummy teams would pick up people that were halfway decent, and then they wouldn't lose anybody because everybody thought all their people were lousy. And you could sort of tell from that how teams were going to swing from one season to the next. I'm thinking the Bears right now, they got more people in the loss column than they got in the win column in terms of guys.
Right, and they weren't that good last year.
Right, but they got rid of the right tackle, or he left, right? They cut him, Massey, what's his name?
Yeah, Massey. Is he gone?
Yeah, and the one linebacker's gone, right? Or the one guy that was pretty good last year, he left, a free agent. Have they signed anybody in any spots other than this quarterback?
No, they have not made any sort of... They franchise tagged Allen Robinson, who is right. Their star wide receiver. We'll see what they do with him, if they're going to keep him or trade him or what. Not very exciting when you have Dalton and Foles to throw to him. He probably wants to be traded, I can tell you that.
Yep.
Other than that, they haven't done much. There's rumor that they're going after an offensive lineman signing. Obviously, the draft is coming up. There's still a lot of time.
Well, the guys seem to be ahead. Just saying.
They were ahead to begin with.
Yes. Russell, real quick, I've asked this question. I asked you last week. My bro dug out this, United Nations inflation chart here regarding food and stuff around the world. Mm-hmm. And one of the themes today, even though we're more on sports and NCAA, because it's kind of fun this week. Plus, there's not much to talk about before the Fed thing anyway. I'm starting to sense that there's becoming a real crossover here, being a disciple of George Stigler, between sociology here and economics and business. We're starting to see, we're on the edge here where if we... In my opinion, if you start pouring inflation on people that haven't had a raise in 20 years, you've got a real problem with your population. I mean, when you've got a median wage of $38,000 when it was $30,000 in 2000, you start dropping a 10% inflation on top of somebody. If you don't get some sort of, I won't say unrest, but serious complaining by people, you got a problem. And especially when the short-term interest rates were nobody... Last time we had inflation, when inflation was 10%, you get 12% on a passport. Now, it looks like we're going to have 10% inflation or 7 or 8, and you're going to be getting 1% in the bank. So, I mean, there's only so much you can drag out of your population. We're either, even us, which are, you know, yeah. we're not we're not going to, riot on anything, but, I mean, at some point, people are going to say, what the bleep, over? But anyway, Dan dug this stuff up, and, the food inflation, especially in the cereal aisle, which means bread, was up from 96.9, which is their number, last July, to 125.7 in February. So that's roughly 30%. And Dan noticed here that the last time it got up really this high, 142, 137, higher than here, 2011, 2012, that's when you had unrest pretty much worldwide, the Arab Spring and everything. Are we reaching a point here where, thank you, sir. I might have another. The guy actually turns around and clocks the guy. I mean, I'm thinking that we're there. I mean, we're pretty darn close. That's one man's opinion. I mean,
it's when it hits people. Right, and you and I pay an inordinate amount of attention to all of these things. And so we tend to see what's coming or know what to be worried about before 99% of people. And then we act a little surprised when they act surprised. You know?
Yeah, like why did you wake up?
And they act surprised when they look down at their paycheck or they look at what the direct deposit was and it changed from year to year and it moved down because taxes got raised. And they suddenly find out that they're rich.
Well,
thought of as rich.
Well, I use it as my foil.
When it actually hits you. And it's, yeah, the interesting thing is the places that have, you know, New York City has, and New York State has experienced a ridiculous drain of people.
Yeah.
And it was something that was already going on before the whole COVID thing. And it's a drain of people that are moving to lower tax situations. Yeah, and it's a financial hub. So they're, you know, those are the type of folks like ourselves that see these things coming and realize what the impact of something's going to be on our personal bottom line before it actually hits. But it's for the general population, it's going to be when it actually hits. And, you know, I think there's going to be a big, you know, there's going to be a surge of being extremely upset. And it might be a bipartisan, you know, everybody below the 1% that's upset about the direction of things, which turns into a very scary mass protest like the Arab Spring over there.
Well, wouldn't
be surprised that hits us at all.
You know, we go nameless. You know, one of the guys in the building, he's like the building engineer, and he does some work for me. Mm-hmm. Hispanic gentleman, terrific guy, absolutely terrific guy. We've become really good friends, but he's kind of my sounding board and what actually people are thinking. But he's never going to grab a sandwich sign and go up walking down the street. He's never going to riot. I mean, he's mm-hmm. just not even close to that. But I'm saying as a custodian or slash engineer in the building downtown now, I'm thinking there hasn't been a raise here certainly in the last year. I mean, you're real lucky that you didn't get laid off, right? Because
if you had three in the building there, now you got two.
Yeah, he was down to 3 days a week there for a while, and the two guys were sharing off. And I don't know if they cut salaries or not. I never asked, but certainly there were no raises. And yet, I mean, I see the guy every morning. He comes up for coffee. I mean, when I cook breakfast, he's always included. You know, I mean, that's the kind of group we have here. But every day he's saying, you know, my car fell apart and I got another car. He's like, big guy. So he calls me. He goes, big guy, it cost me like 4 hours to change the title and get a new city sticker. And I mean, what's going on? He goes, that's like a week's pay for God's sake. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you know, what are we doing here? And he says, you know, he sends one of the kids to Catholic school or private school or something. He goes, that just went up. Mm. He goes, it's like, I mean, what are they thinking we're doing? I mean, someplace, somewhere, it's not going to be my buddy complaining to me. It's going to be saying, "What's going on here?" I mean, it happens kind of all of a sudden. I mean, but all of a sudden, people focus.
Like I was just saying, it's all of a sudden. I think it's almost like a surprise to a lot of people because they're focused on their day-to-day lives. They're not necessarily focused on, you know, how CPI is calculated and how it ends up having a direct impact upon them.
But I have I'm asking Maddie this. Maybe because of him, I'm developing quite an amazing respect for the rapidity at which social media can jump on a topic. Now, I'm going to castigate them for being so far behind you and me and other people on this show as to what is happening. But I get the feeling, you know, this is a Maddie question, the day that it happens, the day that somebody writes an article, and it could be one of us, Russell, say, this is what's happening, this is what you're not going to, instead of it being ignored, there's going to be a Russell article, a Chief article, or somebody, or Kevin, who's writing stuff. All of a sudden, one day, it's going to be, what do they call it, Maddie, when it spins around and everybody gets it?
Viral.
It goes viral.
We're going viral.
Yeah, it's all of a sudden there's going to be somebody somewhere that it's just going viral. And in our day, in our business, I say in our day, hopefully my day wasn't 1982, but the summer of 82, everybody was somewhat of a anybody would, you know, I mean, I'm sitting there going, interest rates are 20, you know, 12.5, 13%. We can't stay here. I mean, the only movement's got to be down, because there's, I mean, the economy can't exist like this. Well, I was a solid year early, easy, thinking the market was going to go up and bonds were going to go down or go up as well. And all of a sudden, one day, and I forget, I thought it was the guy from Solomon, but then some people, when I said it to one day, he was the guru of interest rates, and he said, you know, these rates could actually go down. And that was the morning of the day we started the rally. Now, of course, other people, you know, wrote in, our listeners, and said he had said that a few other times, and nothing ever moved, which exactly proves my point. And all of a sudden, one day, it did. And how you could pick that day in August of 82 on a sleepy week, I have no idea. But someday, and all I'm saying is, I think if it happens, when it happens, the media, the viralness of it, it'll be like everybody knew about it yesterday, but they didn't. I mean, the rally in August of 82 could have happened, I think it was on a Wednesday. It could have happened on a Monday or a Tuesday, but it didn't. If you bought options on Tuesday, they didn't go anywhere, right? And I had felt this way at least since the preceding February, but I'm just a schmuck walking around on the trading floor. Nobody cared what I thought. You know, I think the guy's name was Kaufman. I think it was Kaufman. All of a sudden, one day, one article, it was the time. Maybe other people were thinking of it, and it just caught fire in the newspaper and on the tape, and all of a sudden people started buying. And to this day, that's one of the reasons I'm fascinated so much about the industry, is a lot of things that are somewhat obvious. I mean, the more I read about the crash of 29, of course, in retrospect, everybody said it was coming for years. You know, there was a couple of trial runs where people bought the dip and it went back, and all of a sudden one day, if you read any of the history of it, your first thought is, how the hell did it wait to October of 1929? It should have happened a year or two earlier, or certainly 6 months. I mean, someday that's going to happen, and I'm just fascinated by it, Russell, is how all of a sudden things come to fruition, and the day before they weren't.
What's the tipping point behind all of that?
Yeah. You're a professor. You're supposed to know.
The tipping point is people actually really start to get financially impacted by something.
And they're just waiting for the article, is what you're saying, or waiting for the
Well, not necessarily prediction. The article. Or it's just the
prediction, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's just something that hits you. You know, you can tell them it's coming, tell them it's coming, tell them it's coming, but then when it happens, it's like the last people to evacuate when a giant hurricane's coming.
Well, you actually see the...
Yeah, but this one, maybe it's so complex that it takes a little while for everybody to react with, you know, the way that you would expect.
But once it happens, it's going to happen as quickly, I think.
Oh, yeah. It'll be although there's... The funny thing about the inflation deal is I don't pay that much attention to, like, I don't watch CNBC like you do. I don't have it on all day, and I know you have it on all day in your office. I will watch some programs on Bloomberg TV.
Well, Dan watches those in the other room. We split. He has the Bloomberg, and I have the CNBC.
And I tell my students, I think that Bloomberg does a better job of getting a little bit more in depth, but not hyping everything, questioning a lot more things, and they talk about inflation just about every morning right now. That it's coming. And we do the consulting. We always talk about me being a professor. I work for a derivative consulting firm as well, and we do an annual outreach. And a big part of our outreach is, how would you deal, do you think inflation's coming, and how are you going to prep for it this year?
Well, and
I'll report back in 3 weeks on what people are thinking.
Well,
hopefully it won't be too late.
The sinister piece to this, and this is my experience that I learned at Pullman, were the people that had pricing power and the people who didn't. And the people that had the contract with an escalation clause and the people who didn't think of it. And the thing that, when you talk about inflation, to me, it's not, I mean, if let's put it this way. If inflation went up 10% a year, and everybody got a 10% raise, and every firm, you know, raised prices somewhere between 8% and 12%, nobody would give a rat's behind.
No.
It wouldn't make any difference to anybody. But that's not the way it happens. Some people take tremendous advantage because they're at a pricing point, and other people you know, aren't. And well, in my day, the union guys, not, this is nothing bad about them, because it started in really 68, 69, and I'll say by 75, 74, these guys managed to squeeze, managed to negotiate escalation clauses in their contract. COLA, mm-hmm. cost of living increases. And the first 4 or 5 years, you know, they got denutted like everybody else, right? But they had the mm-hmm. power to work their way in there. But the management people never did, or clearly, you know, caddies never did. I mean, you just look at the people who didn't. You know, the gas station attendants didn't back when they had gas station attendants. So a lot of people were getting a 4% and 5% raise and inflation was 10. So they're falling behind every year. Now, the guys that were the steel workers at Pullman, you know, I don't think Russell, they got the full CPI. I think they got their raise and they got like 80% of the CPI increase or something. So they were creeping ahead a little bit, but not like they were getting full CPI and, you know, and, the other was a little bit less than that. But I don't think in those days, I don't think the teachers had anything in their contract, at least for a while. So they fell behind, and then all of a sudden mm-hmm. they sprung ahead to the people. So it was, you know, I can't separate my inflation fears from my monopoly observations. I mean, Home Depot, Menards, Lowe's are more than capable of raising prices wherever they damn well please, because they're the only people mm-hmm. left. You know, I mean, if you're big enough, I'm not big enough in the construction business, but I know some places where if I don't like the Home Depot price, I can get fastener supply online, or I can go to this, you know, a plasterboard specialty place, and maybe I can basically flip Home Depot off once in a while because I'll work at it, right? But yeah. nobody's capable of. You're not. I mean, if Amazon tomorrow said, we're charging everybody for delivery, and instead of $5, it's $10. What are you gonna do about it? I mean, right?
Probably about the same thing that people do when Netflix is gonna bump from $9.95 to $12.95.
Yeah, you just pay it. I mean, they're gonna lose.
There's more to paying it. You're gonna gripe a little bit, and then you're gonna forget about it and pay it.
Well, the definition
of... But there will be a little grumbling.
Well, let me have a test for the professor. Mm-hmm. When I was in school, the test for pricing power was, if Netflix raises their prices 30%, do they lose less than 30% of the subscribers?
Right.
I mean, they're going to lose somebody. Somebody's going to say, I don't watch a thing in 6 months, $12.95 is too high, screw you guys. Right? Mm-hmm. But the question is it 10% or is it 30%? The same way with in Saudi Arabia right now, I'm going to say they have no pricing power because they're not a big enough piece of the pie. Or if they drop their prices by 30% or increase their prices by 30% and they lose, you know, 40% of their business, they're behind, right?
Yeah.
Where back when OPEC meant something, they could drop their production by 5% and the prices would double. But that's really pricing power. But they've yeah. totally lost that, right? You know.
Yeah, there are too many alternatives out there.
Right. So
they messed around with it to the point of where we became self sufficient enough that they can't impact us like that.
So I guess where I'm going with this is, I think that because the people who have these big companies now are so basically up the ass of every politician we've got. If there's inflation, it's going to be so uneven. They're going to do so well, it's scary compared to other people. I mean, look at what the healthcare has been able to do with it. Mm-hmm. Figure that around the rest of the country. Figure that with your lumber and everything else. I mean, right? What lumber's
boy? Yeah, no, it's gonna work its way into. It's already working its way into a lot of stuff.
Well, you guys, I'll bet you don't have a Cobra plan in your professor salaries?
I don't know. I might find out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say that if the inflation next year is 6% and they give you a 4% raise, they think they're doing you a favor.
Yeah, they probably do.
Well, I'm just saying.
I'm trying to think of what they... You know, it's kind of funny. Non-tenure track professors, there's actually a union at Loyola. So
really?
I ride the coattails of whatever raises I get because the union pushed back an awful lot, even though I'm not in the union.
Okay. Real quick.
How's that for benefit?
Wow. Real, 20 seconds. Is Powell going to screw up this afternoon or no?
I think they're going to prop him up, and he's going to say all the very, very right things because he knows that that people are paying more attention right now than they are normally. We're at a tipping point, a potential inflection point, a transitory point, all those great words.
All the great words.
So I think he's aware of the importance of this of today.
Really. Talk to you next week, buddy. Thank you very much. SP Futures down 12. NASDAQ Futures down 121. 141, sorry. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.